Morning. Thanks. I've been given the opportunity of the updating investors and potential investors on the recent changes in the business. And I'll cover the change in name, the structure of the business, a little bit about each of the business areas that Rua has, and again, some time for questions and answers. So if I can deal with the name change first, move on to the next slide, Hannah. Thank you. So this is a very busy slide, and it's deliberately so because it covers a lot of the historic shareholder perceptions that the old Aortec business had. You see in the top left-hand corner there that the AIM market has just recently celebrated its 25th anniversary. And for most of that period, with the exception of a couple of years of a vanity move to the main list, Aortec has been on that, say, has been in the market. I guess the start of its problems was in 1999 when it won the Best Technology Award at the AIM Awards ceremony. Share price got very excited. And unfortunately, we are still judged by what happened almost 20 years ago. So looking to, get away from the baggage or whatever that the Aortec had. Now, I could have dealt with the shareholder part of it, the market part, but I was being taken round one of the medical seminars, big conferences with John McKenna, our marketing expert. And John is so well known to all the surgeons in the industry, they can move 10 yards and somebody stops him. Oh, hi, John, what are you up to these days? And John was saying, well, I'm at Aortec. And almost without exception, the industry or the surgeons were saying, oh, Aortec, isn't that the, and went on to have some historic perception of what had gone on. And John described that experience as starting a 100-meter race from 15 to 20 meters behind the starting block. He had to go through the history before he could tell about the future, and what the company was all about now. So the rebranding of Rua is to put the past behind us, and have the focus on what the business is doing just now and the plans for the future. So everything from now on is Rua Life Sciences with our the new brand there. So the name is gone, the name has changed, it's a fresh start. So what is Rua Life Sciences? If we move on to the next little slide. Thank you. So we're in the medical device industry, we're a medical device company, and we will succeed as a business if we put the patient at the heart of everything we do. So the patient comes first, we want to improve the patient's life. So the goal is to help patients, and how we're going to help patients is through making better medical devices that eliminate animal byproducts, that use a nice, clean, long-lasting polymers in the elastome family, that make the devices better, easier to make, and have got greater durability. So everything is on making better medical devices and building upon the platform technology of Elastion. So that's what the business is about. If I can then move on to looking at the businesses within the Rua Group. So Rua Life Sciences is a holding company for four businesses, or we kind of look at them almost as investments. So they've been structured this way for a tax-efficient basis and also to create visibility in each of those and give us a corporate flexibility going forward. So Rua Biomaterials, that's our platform technology. It's the licensor of the Elastion material, supplying a material to the medical device industry through our licensees. Rua Medical is the engine room of the business. It's an end-to-end contract developer and manufacturer of medical devices, specializing in implantable fabrics, but becoming what we're terming as an Elastion Academy. It's becoming one of the global centers of excellence in how to manufacture devices with Elastion. And that is feeding into doing work for the two product businesses, which is Rua Vascular. Rua Vascular is the low-hanging fruit in our view when we established the business to get back into medical devices and taking ourselves further up the value chain. The business area that Ruovasta was concentrated on is the simpler devices that we can improve and get to the market quicker. So relatively short term for a medical device, but does make a huge improvement on those devices. And on the far right hand side there, Ruo Structural Heart, that is disruptive technology in the heart valve industry, the $8 billion per annum industry. If we get it right, we will make substantial changes in that area. And that's through the development of tri-leaflet polymeric heart valves. So that's broadly the business structure. All of the companies in the group, they trade together. They all have relationships with each other. So based on the everything's feeding off Elastion technology, Ruo Biomaterials is the licensor of Elastion technology. And it licenses that material to third-party customers, and that generates revenue for us. It's also licensed the material to Ruo Structural Heart, so that they can use the material in the polymeric heart valve, Ruo Vascular, so that they can coat the grafts and other products, and Ruo Medical, so that they can design and develop other medical devices that can go into third-party customers. Ruo Medical is developing and manufacturing the devices for the other group companies. And Ruo Medical also manufactures devices for third-party customers. So by moving away from just being a polymer licensing business, we're going up the value chain and we've got all the parts of the business required to do it. So Ruo Medical really is the core of it all. It's the bit that's making it happen and ultimately to get products out to customers and third-party customers to generate revenue. So that's how they work together. If I can then deal a little bit with Ruo Biomaterials, this is our platform technology. It's the platform on which the group is being built. So within the Elastion material, we believe we've got the world's best biostable, long-term implantable polyurethane. It's protected by a combination of both patents, but more specifically trade secrets. It has been in man for quite some time. It's approved for use in man. There's full FDA material master files, various grades of Elastion. Over 7 million long-term cardiovascular implants have been enabled by Elastion. And the implants have been in for up to 14 years. If you actually explanted some of those devices, the material after 14 years is pretty much exactly the same as the day it went in. So that's the key benefit of the Elastion material. So that testing is non-inflammatory. It's non-thrombogenic. It doesn't calcify, which is particularly important in the heart valve area. It's biostable, biocompatible. It's durable, which again is hugely important in the heart valve area, and it's abrasion resistant. From an engineering perspective, it's a great material to work with. It can be electrospun, it can go through a process, reaction injection molding, it can be 3D printed, dip cast, dip coated, injection molded, extruded, or solution sprayed. So an engineer designing a device with Elastion has got a number of manufacturing options available to them. So moving on, so the current business of Ruo Biomaterials is the IP licensing model. And with the restructure of the group, we've got three new customers, which is Ruo Medical, Ruo Structural Heart, and Ruo Vascular. But third-party customers are important as well. The manufacture of the material has been subcontracted to a licensee, a company called Biomerics, are based in Utah. And they manufacture the material and sell it on to our licensees, and we share the gross margin that's achieved on that. Some of the licensees that we have are users of the material. There's Abbott, which is the old St. Jude's. They quote their cardiac rhythm management leads, which are the squiggly things on the picture there. Biotronic have got a coronary artery stent, a rescue stent, which is coated in a very thin layer of elastane material, which I think is electrospun. The Avalon and MC3 cardiochromatic cannulas, so they're blood oxygenating cannulas. They've got elastane coating, and the Allium prostate stent is having very good results with the long-term implants, those with the elastin coating is enabling those stents to last considerably longer in man than the bare metal stents. So it's a nice little business, turns over about $500,000 a year. The only direct cost we've got against it is the patent maintenance charges. So a good little business. Rua Medical, we describe that as the engine room of the business, and it's the group of people that will deliver the devices for the company. So Rua Medical, it's an end-to-end developer manufacturer of medical devices. So what we mean by that is it can take a customer's design idea in at one end and go through the entire process of then being able to hand that customer product in a package ready to go on a hospital shelf. So it can do all aspects of the medical device development and manufacturing process. It's based in Scotland, so we've got two facilities in Irvine and Prestwick. Both those facilities are FDA registered. We hold ISO 13485, which is a claim that sounds great here, but if we don't have it, you can't operate in the medical device industry. Just been recently through an audit on that. It came through absolutely squeaky clean. Their quality guys did a fantastic job on that. So it's a subcontract business. The work is done from both Class 7 and Class 8 clean room suites. The manufacturing for third-party customers and the benefit of the recent deal is bringing effectively own products into the Rua Medical business. The customer base, the third-party customer base, they are large multinationals. They have got exacting standards. They audit the quality systems, the manufacturing processes. So the plants that we've got there are, they meet the highest standards expected by the large medical device companies. There's 25 members of staff. Those staff have been grown for investing in the future. So we've got capacity to grow that business. And the key competencies within the Rua Medical businesses are implantable textiles and becoming a centre for excellence in applying elastion to medical devices. This business has been affected a bit by COVID. Pre-COVID, it was broadly turning over about 1.6 million, and before the cost of R&D, it will work for other parts of the business, generating 400,000 plus in profit. It's got scope for growth, and covers all the aspects that we need to develop the business going forward. So moving on to the product businesses, Rua Vascular. So it was established to take us up the value chain. Rather than just capture value from a polymer, we were looking to capture value from medical devices. And we've focused the initial products in this area in things that we can get to market relatively quickly without major risks in the products themselves. The overall markets that we're trying between the vascular grafts and the cardiovascular and soft tissue patches is about $6 billion. It's a big, big market. And what we're looking to do is to take the expertise of Rua Medical and applying the polymer properties of elastion to make changes to these devices, which haven't really seen major changes in the last 30 or 40 years, get rid of all the animal product and have nice, clean, easier to manufacture, validatable products. So the current products in development, but we have got a pipeline of others that sit behind that. The ones we're focused on to get to market as soon as possible are surgical grafts, large bore, and by that we're meaning it's in the 20 to 38 mil diameter. a one-piece aortic root graft, which there's a picture just below the words there. You can see it's not a very good photograph, but there was a slight bulge in it. That's the valsalva of the ascending aorta. We've been able to manufacture one of those in one piece. And a cardiac and soft tissue patches in the size ranges that the hospitals demand. So picture-wise, you can see a picture of the graft that we recently put into animals, which is the lovely white tube with the green line through it. And if you look at it microscopically, on one side, the top picture there, you can see the elastium coating, and that is microns thick, but it has sealed the fabric. You turned it over and looked at the clean side of it, which is the blood contacting side. There's no polymer. It's still retained the open weave, which is designed to enable the fibrin ingrowth and the natural healing of the graft. So just sort of moving on to where we are on timelines and what we've been working on. So sort of, this is the plan for grafts. The plan for the patches is exactly the same. As if you think of the patch, it's basically a flat graft rather than a tube. It's the same product. So the left-hand side there are the variables. So things that will impact on the performance of it will be yarn, the textiles, the type of elastin, the polymer that's in that, the process we go about and how to coat it, and the crimping process of the graft. And we're in the testing phase of that just now, where we're looking to, in our own mind, ensure that we've got the right seal, that the graft handles properly, that we're not getting blush when blood goes through it, that the suture line doesn't leak and the suturability of the graft is good, but the guideline works well and that we get fibrin ingrowth. The top four on that, I think we've ticked the box on. The seal's great, there's no blushing. The handle's very good. The suturability was fantastic. There's a bit of an issue with the guideline or the salvage, as it's called technically. And that's resulted in circling back, making a change, another version will go into shape. And both the initial grafts and the later ones will run the trial for us to gather the data on the fibrin, the healing process within that. So I think we're as those pilot testing go as we hope. We're into a design freeze in the relatively short term, we hope, which then takes us into the regulatory testing. So we're doing pilot testing to give us the confidence that the regulatory testing will work. So the type of work that has to be done on that, it's a larger animal trial, so it's larger and longer, so more animals for a longer period of time. There's a specific ISO standard that they have to meet their mechanical testing requirements, validate the manufacturing process, ensure that the packaging system works properly, but that's all been designed and equipment actually purchased for it already. Do the sterilization, validation, shelf life validation, which then enables us to submit the 510K and some supplemental routes so that we'll bring other products through on the back of that. And in parallel with that, we're looking to execute OEM agreements and distribution agreements so that we're there commercially able to launch the product. So that's the next 12 months sort of work plan for the business. Moving on to restructural heart, this is the big opportunity for the company, but it is substantially riskier. The old Aortec invested about $30 million in this and some costs, which generated IP, both positive and negative. But we're looking to build on that to transform that 8 billion heart valve market by completing the design, the development and testing. Again, the vast majority of heart valves on the manufactured use animal tissue. We're looking to eliminate that. We're looking to make a better valve that will last longer, that doesn't require drug treatment, and is substantially cheaper to manufacture. So where are we? What could be done? I think they've made, the team has made huge progress since we restarted this project. We've done new finite element analysis modeling and confirmed leaflet geometry and worked on leaflet geometry through computational fluid dynamics. We've optimized the type of elastion used to make sure that the leaflets work properly. We've actually reduced the level of stress between the old design and the new design by about 75%. We've reduced the profile height of the valve by actually quite a substantial amount, and that's got, you know, big clinical advantages from the surgical perspective of the implanting. Regurgitation has been reduced. We have circled back and looked at the way valves were made before. There were limitations on that previous versions with the dip casting, but you had to design a valve that you could make, and therefore you had compromises. What we've done now is optimised the design, and we're able to manufacture what has been designed. And that's been enabled by a novel manufacturing technology that the team's worked on. The tooling's been done. We've had first off prototypes, and they look very good. There's actually a picture of one there against the old valve. It's deliberately blanked out because there's a lot of IP out there, what's termed the sewing ring area. And will be the source of some future patents that have been created. On timelines and where we stand with the heart valve development, and just move on one, Hannah. The left-hand bit has kind of been done. So we've optimized the design, the computational model has been done, the tooling's been made, we've generated the IP, we've got the first off prototypes. Where we are now is we're pilot testing that, predominantly with hydrodynamic testing. The hydrodynamic testing will prove to us that what has been shown in the finite element analysis is actually working in the physical valve. That may lead to some manufacturing revisions, some improvements. We'll do some evaluation work on the material itself, which enables us to validate the finite element analysis model. So if we've got the precise mechanical properties and the fatigue properties of the material, the finite element analysis tool will give us the confidence to make arguments when it comes to the regulatory phase as to how long a mechanical testing and durability testing is required for that. So spending a little bit of time now, you know, could save 12 months of durability testing in the future. We'll scale the design from a single size valve to the range that's required. And we're already making early advances in the taking that leaflet technology into TAVI design. So we're not as close to design freeze on the polymeric valve as we are with the grafts. But you know, I'm expecting to be at that stage, you know, kind of during the next 12 months when we'll be looking to start the regulatory testing undertaken. So that includes durability testing, some ISO standard hydrodynamic testing, work in the biocompatibility, which we're, you know, really confident with, because we know what, say, you know, what Elastion does, the deep testing into animals, and creating the protocol for human trials. To get pre-market approval or CE marking for a valve, it requires a human trial. It's not a 510k process, and that trial process is 150 patients minimum. 8 centres, 15 valves a centre, follow-up at 1 year, long-term follow-up, and you've got to collect a minimum of 400 years of patient data. So that's a costly exercise, that human trials phase, but the value that's added in the run-up to that in getting rights and ready for approval is quite substantial. So I know that I've sort of run over time a little bit, so I'll just conclude that we're no longer a virtual IP company. We're a fully formed medical device business. We're building two really exciting product companies, but they're supported by the polymer IP business and a great manufacturing business through Ruhr Medical. So if we can, over the next few years, succeed for the patient in getting them better devices that say, you know, work better and last longer, we're going to succeed on behalf of our shareholders. So that sort of concludes my quick canter through the background to Ruhr Life Sciences. And you know, happy to hand over to Hannah, who will organise any questions that people may have asked.
Good, and we've got a fair few that have come in. So just start with a couple that have come in now. Perhaps you could detail, Bill, who your main competitors, who you see your main competitors are in each sector of the business.
In the graft, the surgical graft area in Europe, it's a Terumo Aorta, which is the old Vascutek, and in the US is a Mackey. For heart valves, the big beasts in the industry are Edwards Life Sciences, Abbott, Medtronic, to a lesser extent, LivaNova, but you know, there's three big, huge companies in that area. You know, they are big, all of them are big global medical device companies. And you know, we think we've got products that you know, are going to be hopefully better than what their company offering into the market.
Very good. Now, obviously, it's some road, as you pointed out, towards eventual commerciality. So for the valve regulatory testing, the costs are going to be significant. What are your thoughts on how you plan to fund this and timelines for that funding going forward?
A lot of the cost is the human trial cost is big. You know, it's probably $10-15 million, the cost of human trial for a heart valve. The cost to run up to that, you know, we know what it is. We've got costings and done. It's all on timing. So we've got, you know, the priority is on getting the patches and grafts to market because they will generate revenue quickly. It's we run a balance of how quickly do we develop the heart valve against the cash flow generated from the other products. So you know, COVID is not great, and you know, you go through the what happens if there's another, you know, global lockdown and, you know, yeah, asteroid strike and all that kind of stuff. But we're pretty comfortable with the cash position just now. We're pretty comfortable we can do what's currently in the plan for the next 12 months. If we had unlimited resources, could we do things quicker? Yes. So there's a balance in that, you know, if somebody wants to write us a big check, we balance the value added from doing things quicker against the dilution to existing shareholders. So it's a bit of a non-answer, but hopefully you kind of get some of the thinking that's behind our
view. Absolutely, an ongoing juggling act. Well, you touched there on COVID-19, obviously affected lots of things, but particularly for Rua, how has it impacted your trials?
It's impacted a little bit. I mean, one of the big frustrations is, you know, on Monday we had a sheep undergoing operation, you know, having one of our grafts. There's a picture of, I can show it there, what actually went into the animal. We couldn't be there. So we couldn't see the operation. So I've seen videos of it, but we couldn't physically be there. So we couldn't travel to it. So that's been a frustration. The sourcing of some of the test equipment is taking longer than otherwise would have done. Again, visiting some of the trial sites. So, you know, it's got some frustrations, but I think if we hadn't had the COVID issue, we would not be as far advanced on the graft as we are just now, because we were able to put the entire R&D team at Rua Medical onto the graft and patch project, and they just, you know, really accelerated that over the course of the last couple of months. So, you know, yeah, there's some frustrations, but we've had enormous benefits from it as well.
Yeah, okay, good pros and cons. Now, obviously, in the slides there, you pointed out that your product doesn't use any animal products versus some of your competitors. And how much do you think this this element's appreciated by the surgeons that might use it and plays into your hands from an ESG basis?
Well, I mean, the surgeons all know what's in the products. Animal products have been used for years and years. The heart valves are made out of animal tissue. And people will talk about getting a pig valve, but it's not really a pig valve. It's bovine pericardium that's made it, but people refer to pig valves.
Yeah.
They know that the grafts are sealed with collagen and gelatin. From a regulatory perspective, the regulators don't like animal tissue. COVID came from cross-species contamination. BSE, there was cross-species contamination, came from sheep to cows and cattle and, went into humans, which had a big impact on using bovine product. You can only get it from, I think it's Uruguay, New Zealand, Australia now. So if there was an alternative, I think the regulators and the industry would move to that alternative through time. How quickly it will happen depends on, who is pushing that alternative. If it's a real life science pushing it, it'll be pretty slow. If it was a Medtronic pushing it, it would be much, much faster because they've got the clout with the regulators. The getting rid of animal products or abattoir sourced animal byproducts, as John McKenna refers to it, is something that's going to happen. It's when, not if. And as long as the alternatives available, it will come through.
Good to be on the right side of that debate. Right. Another one here then. Does Elastion coating of your grafts and fabrics offer any resistance to infection once implanted? And if not, is there any potential to combine it with anti-infective agents such as silver?
There has been work done on Elastion and silver. There's been work done on grafts and silver. As part of the animal trial, infection rates is something we will be looking at in comparison to how the control valves have worked. From a marketing perspective and getting those grafts to market, starting to go down the anti-infection route or combining it with drugs takes you down a pharmaceutical route rather than a medical device route. And I think there's enough benefits of just having Elastion coating without having to claim the infection issue. We're not creating a pharmaceutical here. The regulatory path for a pharmaceutical combined device is much more complicated, and we just want to get those devices to market. If it comes through, trials that the infection rate from an Elastion graft is less than the infection rate from other grafts, well, that's great, and that's, you create the marketing from that. But we're not going to delay the launch of the product by trying to make that an initial marketing requirement.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. I think this is sort of back to the funding of the business, but what are the chances of the deal over the next 6 to 12 months with one of the major players to help with the costs of the valve testing?
I haven't asked them. And I don't think I would necessarily intend to ask them in the next 6 to 12 months. We want the majors to know what we're doing, but I'm not going to them cap in hand.
Well, and then I suppose we've had a few more which lead on to that, which is around your AIM listing versus a possible US and what you see as the benefits of AIM versus the US, where an expectation that companies get higher valuations from the VCs there than you might see over here?
This valuations from VCs is a different matter from being listed on NASDAQ or whatever. So they are separate issues. So, to get the VC valuation, we would need to no longer be a public company, which some of the shareholders may like, some of them would maybe rather be in it for all of the ride. We've got no current plans or thoughts about moving to, another market. The old Aortec had a vanity, a move to the main list at one point, came back down again. probably dabbled with thoughts of NASDAQ. The focus, I think the focus is if we can make the progress on the devices and the research and development and articulate that to the markets, the share price will, catch up with itself at some point. I guess the balance we've got to make is the cost of capital and the access to capital within that. But ultimately, if we're successful with these products, I don't believe if we're really successful that we will be selling them into the market ourselves. They will ultimately be something that are moved on to somebody with far greater distribution might than we could possibly have. So it's when it comes to the sale, if we're fortunate enough to get to that stage, that's a negotiation, not a market price thing.
Okay. Got quite a few now on the heart valve. So
right.
We'll move that onto that
as a subject. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What's the most novel aspect of the new heart valve and the way it works? Or is it the way it's manufactured? Will either of these innovations be transferable to other devices or applications?
There's about three or four questions all in that.
Well.
There's nothing novel about the way the heart valve operates. It is a tri-leaflet valve, and it is as close an analog to the natural human valve as we can get. So there's no novelty in having three leaflets that open and close, open to allow the blood to pass through and close to stop the blood regurgitating back into the heart. So there's no, there's nothing clever about that. And most of the heart valves, other than the mechanical ones, work on that basis. There is novelty in the design. So it's the leaflet shape. There is novelty in our ability to design and then manufacture what's been designed rather than having to design what can be manufactured. And that is a major step forward, because that enables the stresses on the leaflets to be reduced, and it enables the life of the valve to be prolonged. It should take longer to fail. And the manufacturing method itself is novel in regards to heart valves. And what we've learned from the manufacture of the heart valves can be used in the manufacture of other medical devices. And there will be patents being applied for that relates to both the design and the manufacturing process of the valve. But I'm not getting into that in a public forum because we need to keep that private until such times as patents are published.
And what about the innovation being transferable?
What we've learned from the manufacture of the valve can be transferred into manufacture of other devices. So we know that the material works in that way with the specifications set. So we can make other things. What they are at this point, we haven't spent a lot of time thinking about that. But yes, it's transferable.
Yeah. Okay. In the sort of nearer term, then, what work and risks remain on getting the heart valve prototype to design freeze?
It's just the risk that you'll get in testing. The old version of it got to design freeze. So are we confident we will get to design freeze with this version? Yes. What do we need to do to get it there? It's confirmationary work and then a decision as to whether or not the valve is good enough to go forward into the regulatory testing. Will it pass the regulatory testing? The balance that I've got is I'm naturally quite impatient to get this done as quickly as possible. And I've got engineers and designers who, by nature, they want to have, 100% perfection. So it's in that balance. What stage is it good enough? Which is where having Johnny Lee, who has had, six or seven heart valves from design phase through to PMA approval from the FDA, and Jeff Berg, who are surgeons that has implanted over 3,000 valves in his day, they're the guys that will say, yes, this is good enough. You don't need to go any further. The right quality of testing is there. It should give us the best chance of going forward.
Okay. And then once you've got to the design-free stage, what's the expected timeline from there to the trials?
Those are trials themselves, but I guess you mean to human trials. Sorry. The longest time frame in that is, assuming you run everything in parallel, which we would do, is the what's called durability or accelerated wear testing. A soft tissue valve, which is the animal tissue valves, have got to be tested through a minimum of 200 million cycles, durability testing. And that broadly takes 200 million cycles, is broadly about 6 months. Mechanical valves, I've got to go through in Europe a minimum of 400 million cycles, in the US, 600 million cycles. So we are a soft tissue valve, but there is a kind of proviso in the standard that says if you're using a new leaflet material, you need to do a minimum of 200 million cycles, but have a proper scientific justification for the number of cycles you need to go through. So worst case scenario, if we're looking at the US, we would need to run 600 million cycles on the soft, on the elastion tissue valve. An elastic leafleted valve, which is 18 months. However, if we've got the scientific package that explains why we can stop at 200 million cycles, we can cut that down to 6 months. So the timing is between 6 and 18 months. The thing that will tell us, or give us the argument as to why we can go through on the 6 month trial data, is down to the fatigue work that's done on the material, and circling back to the finite element analysis work, because the finite element analysis will say and predict the route to failure and the time to failure. And if that shows the right data, we can show that as a package of using the shorter version of the trial. So my gut feel, it will be closer to 200 than 600. And less than 400, but you know, my gut feel and persuading the scientists to write the right to have the right conclusion of the paper. You know, I can tell you what I want the answer to be, but I can't necessarily make the answer happen.
A few questions to be answered along the way. Right. Okay. Let's move on to Elastion then. Revenue generation from the product. Management has felt historically that it hasn't generated the sales it should have done with its pedigree and best in class. So how's that changing, and what are the uses it's been considered for, apart from the known usage in a cannula stents? Can you give us a little bit more detail on that?
There are opportunities for Elastion. Being a materials business is not going to create fortunes for the company. Using the material in our own products will create money for the company and the shareholders, because it's the value chain from providing the polymer for a device through to having a getting that ultimate value in the device itself. Some of the deals we did weren't great historically. They could have been better, but we are where we are. You know, we're working in partnership with Biomerics. We're looking to help them through additional marketing of the Elastion material. David Richmond is getting involved in that area. You know, we hope to be able to grow it. But, you know, I wouldn't buy Rural Life Sciences shares on the expectation of the next license deal for Elastion. Because even if we did a great deal, the types of deals you can do on a material are not going to give the type of return that we'll get of getting a vascular graft to market. So, you know, we're better almost in the sense keeping some areas of exclusivity that we can feed a pipeline of our own products through the Elastion material. it's in areas that, you know, we're not going to address. That's fine, other people can take that on, but the added value is taking up that value chain is making your own products with them.
Okay, then. And following on then, what progress has there been for Exil, which has had a target market where devices require very high mechanical performance, like spinal discs?
Yeah, Exil is a fantastic product. It's got the performance of, it's the softness of silicon with the durability and the abrasion resistance of Elasteon. It's a fantastic material. It's more expensive than gold. It costs a huge amount of money to make a margin on it. We've got to charge a lot of money to people. It's one that is there. It is potential. Whether commercially you can make it work is something that we've got, you know, we've got an exercise to work on. But why hasn't it been there in the past? Too expensive. Made cheaper, probably. Is the demand for it there? We don't know.
So I think I could probably guess the answer.
Yeah, it's a mousetrap that's been invented that isn't necessarily, it's a much better mousetrap, but the other mousetraps are kind of working just now.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
I spent a lot of money on it.
Someone's asked the thing then, would it be relevant to the knee cartilage replacement market? Because that would be huge, but it sounds like you need to get the costs down.
It's certainly relevant in orthopedics. That's one of the areas that it was initially sort of created on. Mm-hmm. It's an area of business that, as a group within Real Life Sciences, we haven't got that great a connection in. It's an area that, you know, we will be working with biomedics on us, you know, can you get this into those areas? If we do, it'd be great. But it's not, you know, it. We've got an awful lot of really exciting things we're working on. I can't let the team get distracted and go off on orthopedics when I want to get a heart valve done and I want to get the grafts done. We spread ourselves too thin, we'll succeed in nothing.
Absolutely, focus is everything. In which case, I think I can almost guess the answer to the next question, but I shall ask it since it has been asked. Someone says that the stent market is huge and they think you have some exposure there. Is there any chance of grabbing more of that market?
The stent market is huge, particularly in coronary artery stents. We are involved in that through providing the material for the Biotronic PK Papyrus stent. Getting into coronary artery stenting costs bucket loads of money. And I'm just not prepared to start an R&D project to compete with one of our customers on that, even though I know the product will be good. There's an opportunity in peripheral artery stenting. And that's something that's, you know, within Ruovascular, I hinted earlier that we've got, a pipeline of other things we'd like to be interested in. Peripheral artery repair or stenting is one of the things in that, but that's a bit off. Let's focus on what we're doing just now. But yes, stenting is big. The big area in stenting is coronary. I'm not going to spend the money on taking an Aston into coronary artery and somebody else already has them.
Let's loop back to competitors or. Foldax obviously recently raised some money and also developing in the heart valve project. What can you learn from the way they are doing things and do you see them as a competitive threat?
I've got to be careful what I say about Foldax because I'm contractually bound not to disparage them. So I'll leave it at that as far as any opinions. Observations are they're doing us a favour. They've ploughed a furrow with the FDA and have taken a polymeric valve into market, into human trials. It is an early feasibility trial. It's not the trial required to get PMA, the patients seem to be doing well. I've heard through the industry of one issue, but on the whole, I think they're going pretty well, which is good, because I don't want to be, you know, trying to take our valve through human trials when the Fondax valve has failed, because I would rather be saying our valve is better than, rather than our valve will work because. So their success is actually quite important to us. They've just raised some money, which is great for them. It will, you know, help fund the trials going forward. I had half anticipated, because I've been told they were doing it, that the next event for Fondax might have been a sale rather than a fundraise. So there's observations and conclusions to be drawn from that, you know, I'm not going to speculate on. But, you know, I believe our valve will be better, because from the pictures and what I've seen on the website, what we know, I think we've taken things forward. You know, the DNA of the two projects, you know, kind of sit within the old aortic. You know, no secret, Jason Beath and Frank McGuire are old aortic employees. But I think from, you know, what I've seen of the work that was done previously, what I've seen of what's been done now, knowing the fudging that went on in some of the finite element analysis models historically, and how that's been sorted out now, I think we've got a better product, and I know a better way of manufacturing it. So, you know, I hope they're really successful, because if they're really successful, we will be even more successful.
It's a very generous answer. I think we are...
clenched teeth.
I think we are on to our last question. Can you provide an update on the Medibrain tie-up?
It's going kind of as expected. So Medibrain are taking elastomer material to coat and encapsulate stents and sort of metal projects, and taking the sewing and whatever issues out of those. They've got some customers that are interested. They are working closely with Biomerics on the material. It's not going to happen overnight, because if you're developing a new medical device, we know how long that takes. But I view it as a really good centre of excellence that fits together with what we're doing within the Ruhr Medical business, of having another area of expertise on, you know, the coating technology, you know, which may well have some interest to us in taking the heart valve into transcatheter. So it's going along as expected. It's a future opportunity. It's not going to generate a lot of revenue just now, but I'm not disappointed with what they've been doing. You know, they're a great, they promote themselves exceptionally well. They're really well known within the industry. Them being out there, you know, promoting our polymer as part of their offering does us absolutely no harm at all. The more people talk about the material, the better.
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Bill. I think nearly at the hour, so we shall wrap up there. For those of you who haven't seen it already, you can find research and forecasts on our website at equitydevelopment.co.uk. We will also be making this recording of this webinar available, so if you would like to share it with others, you can find it there as well. Otherwise, we look forward to speaking with you again some point soon, Bill.
Absolutely. Thanks very much. Thanks for being with me. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.